In today's sermon, we are going to finish a topic that I've been working on here for two prior sermons. This will be the third sermon in a series on the subject of parenting, and this will be the final sermon. So we'll move on to other things since the Passover will be coming up here before you know it, and we'll need to focus on that as we get closer. So we're going to look at some principles that are important for us to consider as parents, and we're going to look at some the issue of discipline as we bring this whole thing to a close. So, sometimes we have this idea that discipline is spanking, and that's not the case, as we'll see as we look at the subject. But let's begin with an overall premise that we all have to consider as we think about raising children. And that principle is being farsighted as parents. And this is a proverb that most definitely applies to the way that we deal with our children, and that's found in Proverbs chapter 22, verse 6. It says, "There, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." And when you look at this proverb, I think I understand it better today than when I first came across it, and I've heard different explanations. One is, once you train them and they've had that training, then they'll take a detour in whatever way, and then when they're old, they'll come back to it. But this isn't the meaning. This is meaning that as parents, we should train up our children with the future in mind, training them to be a person of character and quality from the very beginning, and they're going to be that way throughout their entire lives. It's not just some brief time in the church that they're going to practice the principles of God, but we will teach them those principles, and they will be practicing them forever. So the way we want to parent is looking ahead, looking to the future, looking to that point when they've moved beyond childhood and have come to maturity, and they have learned the principles of God in their home, and they can stand on their own two feet, and they can practice the principles of God. That's what God wants us to focus on. And when we think about the future and our children, then as we're planning and training for the future, then the way that we approach our kids is without wavering. We see our goal, we see our purpose, and it's not just for some of the people that have children, but all people are to be striving for that same goal. They're striving for the same goal and working for that same goal. As an adult, as a parent, we're responsible to help them to be develop right character, to develop morals and ethics, and to be a person who loves God, and a person who is of right morals and characters and ethics, and who loves God and has a relationship with Him. That's what we're training our children for. So maintaining that aim requires that a person basically put that as the focus of what they're doing as a parent. I am a parent. God has blessed me with children, and these children are my responsibility to raise. And there will come a point when those children are going to leave my household, and when they leave my household, I want them to be mature, to be people who will be upstanding in the community, in their local church, and in every aspect of life. And we have to ask ourselves as parents, do I have such a vision? Do I have such a vision? And if so, do I keep it in the forefront of my mind as my chief responsibility as a parent to train them up in the way that they should go? And as you think about that, just a reality is, I never thought of this with my children. We did our best to raise them, but we did not have some long-term vision for them because I was not aware of how this could be applied. So, but we sought to take care of things. We wanted them to grow up in the faith and to continue in the faith, but we did not have that long-term vision I wish I had had. But as all of us do, we do the best that we can. As you look at most parents today, that's not their vision. Most parents have a vision of how they're raising their children that's short-term. It's all about short-term goals and a short-term purpose rather than looking to the time when they're going to be mature and what are they going to be like when they're 30, not when they're 3 and 4 and 9 and 15. What are they going to be like when they're 30? That's the vision we have to have. We're looking down the road a long way. So you have, well, my kid's only 6 months old. Well, you got to still have that vision and work with them in the stage that you're in. So what happens is most parents have short, nearsighted goals. They want, they're raising their child and they're trying to get them to, you know, get them through the twos, through the toddlerhood situation. They're trying to get them, they're going to school. Well, I want them to learn their ABCs and I want them to do know the days of the week and all of the things that you teach them as parents and to try to back up what they're going to learn at school. So you're dealing with that, but that's a short-term goal. Nothing wrong with it, but you've got to think more long-term. And I mean, that's what I'm encouraging you to do today. So short-range goals are things that are like you're getting your child through their spelling test and they're learning to spell and getting hundreds on those tests. You want them to learn to spell. You want them to learn to do basic things that are taught in school. You want them to improve in their report card and get good grades on their report cards. We enroll them in a whole bunch of activities to different things which aren't bad in and of themselves, but do those take precedence over training them for the way they're going to live at the age of 30? Parents who start out nearsighted usually continue to be nearsighted throughout the entire time that they're raising their children. So many times they're completely missing the long-term vision of their child's future, his adulthood. And if you help your child make straight A's, does it train them up in the way that they should go? So is the way of God, the way that they should go, is it getting straight A's? Is it being an excellent student? Or is there something that's much more important? And it seems that sometimes we aren't aware of that goal, but hopefully we will be more aware of it after today. As Christians, might we not see it as more important for our child to be a responsible, charitable, honest, reliable, and compassionate citizen, a devoted family man or woman who has developed an ongoing relationship with God the Father and Jesus Christ? When you compare getting hundreds on your spelling test or being that kind of a person, which is more important? And as you look at people, you have people that excel in school. That's fine. But are they people of character? Are they learning to be people of character? And there's plenty of people that have been great academics, but once they get beyond that, morally, they're not all that they should be. And you know, wouldn't you rather have a child who maybe didn't do as well in school as you would have liked or they would have liked because of whatever reasons it may be, but they're people of character? Wouldn't you rather have a child who's honest and a child who's truthful, a child who's a hard worker, a child who is kind and thoughtful? Those are all things that really last and are important. A son or a daughter who will treat their spouse well. All of those things are important, and they are things that you can teach as a parent. One child expert mentioned that as he begins his presentations, he always asks his audience to write down their long-range goals for their children. Ask them to write them down, and one of the answers that's often given about a long-range goal for their children is that they want them to go to college. They want them to go to college and get a college education. And I'm not condemning college education because it is good. I know my parents told me, son, you are not going to just get out of school and get a job. You're either going to go to trade school or you're going to go to college. So my parents said, you know, we grew up with a certain experience and we want your life to be better than ours. And you need to be educated in some way. Well, I knew that going to trade school was not for me, as my wife can well attest. My trade school training is very limited, and there are people that are much better than I am. But I felt I needed to go to college and get an education. That was the easier path for me. But if that's not your path, then don't go down that path. But anyway, college is not the goal that's important, because we're looking at what's important to God. And when you look at God and how He measures things, being a great academic, you get good grades and have great knowledge, is not what He's all about. Having them be doing well financially or professionally isn't all important. Character and maturity in that character is what matters. So good character is not a requirement for a college degree. If you go to college, they will never ever mention character. It's not important. They want you to excel academically, professionally. And good character is not obtained in just going to school. In fact, as you're going to school, you're going to battle to maintain your integrity, your honesty, and your character all the way through, because most of the people you'll be going to school with, they don't care about character. Some do, but most do not. So we have to ask ourselves, would we prefer our child to obtain a degree from a prestigious university, but be untrustworthy, deceitful, sexually immoral? I don't think any of us would choose that, would we? So we want our children to grow up in the truth and learn to practice the truth, and we can have a great impact on them. And that's what we want to do as their parents. And this, hopefully I'm preaching to the choir, but it is still something to think about. And as you set long-term planning for your children as a goal, you have the greatest chance of achieving that. So we want to ask ourselves, is our parenting behavior consistent with how you want your child to be when he's 30 years of age? And so that's the first principle we want to think about. The second principle is that parenting has seasons. Parenting has seasons. It's not the same season all the way through from birth to when they leave your household. It has seasons. And God is the one who created the seasons. You have the planting season. You have the harvest season. And God created things this way, and it's not only that way in day-to-day life, but it's this way in raising your children. So as your child is born, you might label it the season of service. And basically it's a two-year stint. This season goes along about 2 years, and you're going to be serving your child, because your child needs service. They can't service themselves. And you're their servant. And basically the mother is the chief servant and the father is her helper. So he's like a teaching aid, and he helps her out and fills in for her when needed. But he's more of an aid than the hands-on person. So the child in this early stage, this first season, is not able to serve himself. And he doesn't understand the consequences of his action. For instance, you know, as you lay your child on the bed, and that child has reached the point where they can roll over, have any of you noticed how quickly they can get to the edge of the bed? Yes, they can move over there pretty quickly, and all they can do is roll. But they can't roll to the edge of the bed, because they don't realize that as I get close to the edge of the bed, I could fall off, and that's going to hurt. And I remember when I was probably in seventh grade, I had to watch my brother, And I was always amazed at how quickly he would move to the edge of the bed, you know, for whatever reason. Man, he gets over there quickly. And so you got to keep an eye on him. And that's the reason that they need attention, is because they don't realize that it's dangerous for them to roll over like that and get close to the edge of the bed. So the child in this stage is the center of the parent's attention, and basically they orbit around the child. And there, they, when the child cries or the child needs something, then the parents are there to help take care of that, and that's their fundamental responsibility. So the purposes of this particular season are to root the child securely in the world, to provide for the children's fundamental biological needs, and to prevent as much as humanly possible the child hurting himself. So you want to raise them, care for them, nurture them, watch over them, and that takes lots of attention and time. And during this season, as I said, the mother is the primary servant and the dad is the parenting aid. So he's helping out mom, filling in when needed. In this season, the marriage is not the preeminent issue. In most of the seasons of life, marriage is the preeminent issue. But in this stage, it's not, because you have to attend to the child. But all seasons come to an end, and this one does as well. So really, where the marriage is the most important thing, the relationship between a husband and wife is the most important thing, that has to be put on the back burner for the most part. And as you have a chance, as you have the opportunity to continue this close relationship between husband and wife, that has to be delayed. And when you move out of this stage, then you move back to where the parents are the most important thing and not the child. But it's something that you have to go through. So, so as you go through this, you learn certain things, and there comes an end to this season. And once this season comes to an end, the first season comes to an end, you have a new season beginning. And that's going to be the season where you are going to help your child to become more independent. And so you're going to do less hands-on work than you did in the first season. So you're going to, and this is a transitional year that begins about the age of two. So you're going to move beyond diapers and teach them to use the toilet. You're going to be moving in this direction. And children are different. They aren't all going to, at 2 years old, learn to toilet train. We've tried it at two. Sometimes it worked. Other times it didn't. And so you realize that everything is not going to be just according to some sort of a schedule. It's going to be as it works out, but you begin moving in that direction to where your child is going to become self-sufficient. They're going to be, when they have to go to the bathroom, they're going to get on the toilet and use the toilet. So you're probably going to have some accidents along the way, and there is a point in that process, from our experience, where they have no clue. If you put them on the toilet, what do? They play. They just play, because what is this? This is kind of fun. I don't mind sitting here for a few minutes, but as far as using the toilet as it's expected, it's not happening. And we've just gone through, we're going through this with my granddaughter. We're not on the ground doing it, but you know, we hear about, she went to the potty today, and oh man, it's so exciting. Whereas for us, it's routine. It's not for her, and it's a big deal for her. So as you go through this stage, then you try to restore the boundary that exists between parent and child. And a mother begins to limit access that the child has to her. Not that she doesn't love the child, but her goal is for the child to become independent. So she's going to be less attentive than she was. It's not that she doesn't love the child. And there are times when the child needs a lot of attention and a lot of, you're orbiting around the child. So you have to look at your child and where they're at and then adjust accordingly. But you're trying to teach them, rather than you getting a cup of water, you teach them you need to go get a cup of water, and teach them to do it on their own. Teach them to feed themselves. And children work at different levels. They're not all going to pick that up right away. And they're going to, some will be earlier, some will be later. But you're pushing toward that. You teach them to pick up their toys. And that's also a project in and of itself. But you're teaching them to clean up their room. So when you say pick up your toys, they actually will pick up their toys. And you teach them what to do. So you back slowly out of a state of high involvement with your child and reestablish a state of high involvement between you and your husband, between you and your husband as parents. And with this transition from season one to season two, it's called, and you're teaching them and you're trying to help them to become more independent, not completely independent, but more independent. You still are going to have to work with them, and the next stage, the third stage that begins about 13, is when you're going to mentor them. And you're going to continue to teach them. You're going to continue to show them the way. You're going to help them to develop the skills that they need, but you're going to move on to more serious skills like, you know, as they're going to through that stage, beginning at around 13, you're going to have to get a job someday. So can you fill out an application? And interview for a job? Are you able to handle money? Are you able to plan for the future? And begin working with them on those things which are mature goals and projects that you have to work with your children on. And the goal is that you're going to come to a point where your children are emancipated. It sounds like they've been slaves, but that's not what it means. It means they're going to be able to be ready to move out of your house. So you want them to reach that point where they're ready to leave your house and they're ready to stand on their own two feet and they're ready to apply the principles that you've taught them. And so you're going to teach them these things, and as you move to this stage, it's about, it's called the season of friendship, where your children have grown up and you're friends. You're no longer their mommy and their daddy, and you're no longer going to take them to the potty. You're not doing those things, hopefully not at 18, 19, 20. Yeah, it's pretty bad if it is the case, but they've grown up, and they're able to handle things on their own. And that's what you're teaching them, and you're teaching them to do it in a way that is pleasing to God. So as you think about the dates when children would be emancipated, if you went back to 1600, which was the time of Shakespeare, how old were children when they were emancipated in that age? It was about the age of 18. In 1970, children were, the year of emancipation was about 20. In 2021, the year of emancipation is 27. So they've gotten older, and they're not getting out of the house early as they once did, and there are various reasons for that, some legitimate, some not. So as you go through these parenting picture, these transitions, I know our relationship with our children has changed. Our children have grown up, they're adults, and when we tell them something that we think is important for them to take note of and maybe apply, then we're not surprised when we hear these words, duly noted, which means, I hear what you're saying, but I'm not going to do that. And that's their right. They're adults, but we're always their parents, aren't we? I'll always be my kid's dad, and my wife will be their mom. And so we make input, but they don't always appreciate that. And we've also realized that they're not going to jump when we tell them how high. That's not happening anymore. But they can listen, and with the input we make is because we love them and still care for them, and we always will. But we move to a different stage where we're peers or on the same level. And we make input, and trust me, they make input to us, okay? And that's okay. We're both adults, and they make input, and believe it or not, sometimes their ideas are better than what we have. So we appreciate that. And just one interesting thing, I know that when my son was a teenager, he recognized that his job as a teenager was to spend our money. So we told him, I'm not sure about that, but he still believes that that is part of his job, and so he finds various ways to supposedly improve our life and spend our money. So sometimes, again, we tell him, duly noted, and so he always has an idea, it seems. And some of the are very good ideas, but he's willing to make input, and we appreciate that. Now, the thing we're going to talk about here for a while now is discipline. Now, discipline is something that is quite important for you as a parent. And for those of you who have been around the church for a while, what was our chief form of discipline at one stage? It was called spanking. And that is not the only form of discipline. So as you look at the world in which we live, there is an approach toward discipline that is quite common and is called behavior modification. For those of you who've gone to college, you've probably heard of behavior modification. And it's commonly used in child rearing, because most of the people advocating behavior modification believe that we're all animals. And behavior modification is an approach that we use in training dogs or other animals. We aren't animals, nor are our children. Our children are human beings, not animals. And behavior modification works well in training your dog, because if I want my dog to learn a trick, then I teach him the trick. You know, you roll him over and he gets a treat. You roll him over and he gets a treat. And you say the words roll over. And you keep saying that long enough, and eventually when you say roll over, he'll roll over. And he also expects a treat. So you've changed his behavior. And animals respond that way, but human beings are not animals. They are free moral agents, and if you give your child a treat when you want them to do something, they may do it because they want the treat. You know, we all like whatever reward we're going to get, but that's not the primary approach we should use, because it doesn't work in the long run, as you'll see. We, you know, our children are, as I said, they are created in the image of God, and they have free will. And that's the difference. Your dog does not have free will. They can be trained, they can be motivated, and they can learn to a certain extent, but they do not have free will. And you can train your child, but your child always has the option of saying, nah, I'm not going to do that. And surprisingly, they do. They may not say, I'm not going to do that. They just may not do it because they don't want to, because they're angry over something. Who knows? So this is part of human nature. And human nature is that that little child, as it's born, it's like a blank slate. But due to their selfish nature, you know, I want what I want, and I want it now, and Satan's influence and the world around, their nature, which is a blank slate, is unfortunately corrupted. And they become corrupted, and we'll talk about this a little more. And what happens is, as your child goes through that first 2 years, the first 18 months especially, what's your child like during that period of time? Most children are cuddly, they're cute, they're, you know, you carry them and you just love holding them, and you love doing things for them, and they're generally cooperative. But at about 18 months, something emerges that is shocking, and that is human nature begins to display itself. And basically, these children begin to express the three fundamental beliefs of children. The first one being, what I want, I deserve to have. I'm entitled to it. What I want, I want. And that's how it's going to be. That's how I see the world. The second thing is, because I'm entitled to what I want, I'm going to do whatever I have to do to get it. I'm going to cry. I'm going to throw a tantrum. Whatever it takes, I'm going to do it to get what I want. And the third one is, the rules do not apply to me, therefore no one has a right to deny me or stand in my way. I want what I want. I want it now. And how dare you deny me what I want? And you may say, that's not my kid. Well, I have to admit, those were my kids, because those things began to manifest themselves at some point. And when this begins to manifest itself, most parents are startled. We didn't expect this cute, cuddly little baby was going to begin to manifest these characteristics. And sure enough, they do. And when it happens, you know, you're basically have to say our honeymoon as parents is over. And what they have is a little monster. He's no longer the affectionate, easygoing child. And the little monster demands his way and screams and cries when parents don't do what he wants them to do. Because his experience during the first 18 months of life is mom and dad have catered to his every whim. So being human and being a thinking human being, he's figured out this is the way it is and the way it's always going to be. And so if you don't conform to what I want, then I'm going to make your life miserable. I'm going to act in a way that you don't find pleasant. So, you know, the little monster that's created through that necessary process screams and cries when his parents don't do what he wants them to do. And he expects them to read his mind and goes ballistic if they are lax in this duty. Hey, didn't you get the thought? You knew what I wanted just by hearing that thought transmitted in the air. If mom and dad try to comfort him during one of these fits, he slaps, scratches, bites. Have any of you had that experience? He's kicking. He blatantly defies their instruction while looking at them as if to say, I dare you to do something about it. And I remember to this day certain experiences with our children when they knew what they were doing was wrong, and they just looked you right in the eye and did it anyway. Challenging, are you gonna do something about it? You had no choice but to do something about it. But that defiance was just very memorable. Wow, I didn't expect that. And they seem impervious to punishment. They demand to be served like a king. And, you know, they're displeased at your most conscientious efforts to be of service to them. And, you know, many parents don't realize that the sweet boy or girl they lived with for 18 months was not the real boy or girl. That at 18 months, the real boy or girl is coming out and is basically expressing human nature. And you begin a battle of wills. Is it going to be my will, or is it going to be the child's will? And this is a tough period of time. And basically they've reached that point where they're going to just decide who's going to run the show here. Are you, or is it going to be the child? And it's not because children are, you know, just terrible. It's just part of growing up and learning that there are limits on what I can do and limits on the way I act and limits on what's going to be good for me as I grow up. And you as a parent are the one who is going to direct all that. And as your child acts out, throws a tantrum, makes your life miserable, it brings disorder to your house. And your job is to guide them and direct them so that you have a house that is in order. And, you know, basically this whole process that unfolds is a product of your loving your child, you're paying attention to them, you're making them your priority, and they've come to certain conclusions about that. And that was appropriate to that age. But now you've moved into a different season, and you've got to correct some of that naturally occurring selfishness and point them in the right direction. For instance, just imagine this scenario. One day, the mother of a 21-month-old child who has never witnessed an act of violence, even cartoon violence, denies her child a cookie before supper. "Can I have a cookie, Mommy?" "No, I don't want you to spoil your dinner." So what happens? It all goes off the deep end. So it could go different ways. There could be a tantrum, falling on the ground, kicking their feet, and crying, and basically very unhappy. And, you know, the screams that take place once you deny them the cookie could be translated this way: "How dare you deny me a cookie? Give me a cookie or you will suffer the consequences." Now, they don't say that, but that's the message that's being sent. So out of the goodness of her heart, the mom picks up the 21-month-old and tries to comfort him. Says, "Yes, you can't have a cookie now, but we're going to have dinner, and you can have a cookie later, but not now." Well, that's just outrageous and unacceptable. So the child decides with perfect aim that he's going to hit his mom. So if any of you have ever experienced your child hitting you, so they decide, "I'm going to hit you. You're going to conform to what I want you to do." And as you look at the child is very angry. And you can see the anger expressed in the hitting. And it's not an accident. The child wasn't just thrashing around. The child had every intention of hitting you and getting you to conform to what they want you to do. But it's still shocking. I mean, I have a few memories in my, not so many vivid memories of my own children, but my grandchildren. I've seen some interesting things, you know. One time, one of the children did not want to cooperate, and so they were eating, and the child decided, "I'm going to sweep everything here off of this table." And so just pushed it all off and shot it onto the floor, and you're just kind of just shocked, you know. But so you have to deal with that, and that's one of the things you have to deal with as parents. So where does this rage come from? They've not ever seen it. You know, they've not seen somebody acting like this. So where does it come from? Amazingly, as soon as a child has mastered the ability to speak, he can begin to lie. So he's probably not heard a lie in his life. But because he's a human being, he can conclude that not telling the truth is the way to go, because I've done something that my parents didn't want me to do, and if I tell the truth, I'm going to suffer. So what's the best way? According to human nature, lie about it. So I can't remember exactly when lying kicked in my life, but I remember, you know, when I bit my brother, which was a display of human nature. I was jealous of my brother, and he's in the playpen, and I bit him, and my mom noticed this big bite mark, because I obviously didn't bite him lightly. I bit him hard. So she looked at his arm when she was changing his diaper and said, "Did you bite your brother?" "Oh, no." And so only my mom, my brother, and I were at home. So yeah, he wasn't going to bite himself that hard, trust me. And I was the only one. He didn't have any teeth. I mean, he's a baby. And so who else could it be? My mom certainly didn't do it. So she figured out I was lying, and I suffered as a result. And I deserve to suffer. And she would not put up with that. And as you look at that child carrying out this behavior, he's never seen this. He's not seen somebody model it, and then he's adopted it. And as you look at the world of psychology, they can't explain why this child takes this action. But we can explain it, because we know there's human nature. And this is the way human nature acts. Psychology cannot explain the arbitrarily rebellious behavior of a toddler, because psychology refuses to accept that humans are basically rebels at their base. That's just how they are. Human nature only wants to do what it wants, and it doesn't want to cooperate or submit to any kind of authority. So the single biggest challenge that parents face is helping your child to be properly socialized, to understand what's right and wrong, to understand about manners, to understand about what's honest and true, and the path of integrity. And that's part of the long-term goal that we have as parents. I want to work with my child because when he's 30, I want him to be a person of character, a person who's honest, who's truthful, a person who's a good worker and has learned all of these qualities that are essential to a successful life. And that's what we want our children to be like as they grow up. So let's think about discipline, some principles that the Bible gives us here as we reach a conclusion. And there are 10 of them. They're scriptures that apply to discipline. And all of them are ones that you can take to heart and hopefully apply them in your raising of your children. So these principles are ones that God has given to us. And the reason is because the positive influence of parents who are committed to raising a person of character is essential if a child is going to make and keep making the choice to behave properly. And you have a great deal of influence on that outcome. The first principle is this. It's found in Proverbs chapter 3, verse 12. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 12. And it talks about discipline and it talks about love. And it's found in Proverbs 3, verse 12, where it says, "For whom the Lord loves, he corrects, just as a father the son in whom he delights." So in our present world, if you love your children, you would not discipline them. But God, amazingly, disciplines his children. And it's an expression of his love for his children. It is an expression of his love for his children. And, if you love your children, this proverb says, then you will discipline your child. Because if you don't discipline them, you don't point them in the right direction, what happens? They're just going to be running wild. So you want to discipline them. And so the Bible says that principle, that discipline is an expression of delight in the child. Like it says, "For whom the Lord loves, he corrects, just as a father, the son in whom he delights." So when is your son going to be more delightful? When they're obedient or they're being disobedient and running wild? I would say most of us would pick that child that is disciplined. And it's our job as parents to discipline the children. So the Bible also says that parents who discipline their children are basically doing a work that's like God. They're doing a work that's a godlike work. So, yeah, as you think back to the Garden of Eden, did God love Adam and Eve? Yes, he did. So when they defied God, what happened? He punished them, didn't he? Example for all of us. The second point is this: punishment is never pleasant, but produces great discipline for the person punished. Punishment is never pleasant, but produces great benefit for the person punished. Like it says, and let's look at Hebrews chapter 12, verse 11. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 11. It says, "Now no chastening seems to be joyful for the present." I never got any enjoyment out of it, did you? None of us did. It was needful, but it was painful most of the time in my particular experience. "Nevertheless, afterward it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it." So I was punished for lying. I was punished for hitting. I was punished for a whole variety of things that I did because of my carnal nature. I was angry. I was upset, whatever it may be. For instance, One day my brother and I were playing games, and he was 3 years younger than me, so I should always win. Well, I played him in this game that I really liked, and he beat me 3 times in a row. So I was just very unhappy, so I punched him. And I was punished for that. And that's just carnal nature in action. How dare you beat me? But I needed to grow up and realize I'm not going to win every game. So no chastening seems pleasant for the present, seems joyful for the pleasant for the present, but it's painful. But it yields good fruit to those who are trained by it. And you have to keep that in mind. You don't want to punish your child, but every child needs it. And when punishment is appropriate, you need to use the appropriate punishment. And when I'm speaking of punishment, I'm not talking about spanking only. There are plenty of options to get your child's attention. So you want it to be painful. So sometimes the pain is inflicted by saying, well, you're not going to be able to enjoy these toys for a particular period of time. What? That's my favorite toy. How dare you take it? You know it's painful. But as they improve in their conduct, you give them back. And basically, you know, as you discipline, the word discipline is derived from the concept of being a disciple. So you, as the parent, are helping them to learn. They are your disciple. And Christ had disciples. You, as a parent, have children who are your disciples. So since you're teaching them the right way, then you want to discipline in the right way that's going to help them as your disciples. So you want to, you know, as you think about inflicting something that's painful on them, you know, there was a time in this world where parents inflicted pain on their children, not just to be inflicting pain on them, but it was necessary for their misbehavior. They needed to be punished. So you need, and there's a point where, even a point where you could use corporal punishment, but that should be the rarity. Most of the time you can get their attention because you know what they like and what they don't like, and you can give them the timeout chair. No way, don't make me sit down. Yes, you're going to sit down there until your attitude changes. I heard that several times in my life. And you can go to your room until your attitude gets better. I've had those experiences. And so it's all part of helping you get your children's attention and pointing them in the right direction. The third principle is this: punishment is essential to proper discipline. And this is a concept that is tied in with Hebrews chapter 12, verse 6. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 6, it says, "For whom the Lord loves, he chastens." He loves them, and so he chastens them, and scourges every son whom he receives. So this does not mean you buy a whip and you whip your children. No, that's a concept that conveys the seriousness of things, and it's just a concept to help you understand the punishment. And you do it because you love them, because you know I love them, and they're saying, "Dad or Mom, I don't want any more of that love. I've had plenty." But you have to persist in doing what's right, to point him in the right direction. One Christian psychologist was just coming to grips with the fact that much of what he had been taught in graduate school really did not apply properly to raising children. It wasn't accurate. And he was going through this class to become an instructor in this particular type of this approach to parenting. So he was listening, and he realized that the discipline being taught was not discipline at all, but reasoning, talking, and explaining. Reasoning, talking, and explaining. He then asked the instructor why the word punishment was conspicuously lacking in the lectures and in the course materials. And the instructor answered that punishment lowered self-esteem and caused behavioral problems to become worse. The instructor said it's not a loving way to correct misbehavior. However, what does the Bible say? That's what this guy thinks. What does the Bible say? It says, however, the Bible says proper discipline, including punishment when appropriate, is an expression of love. So when you think of the two concepts, which one are you going to believe? Are you going to believe what God says, or are you going to believe what some psychologist says? So believe the psychologist as long as it fits with the Bible, but if they don't, you got to say, no, I'm going with the Bible because I believe this is what's going to work. So it's something that if we love our children, we will deal the discipline out as it's appropriate. And we'll try to find ways in which we can get their attention that's not always with beatings, and there comes an age when it's completely appropriate to spank. The fourth principle is this: proper discipline validates a child. It validates a child, and this ties in with Hebrews chapter 12, verse 8. There it says, if you are without chastening, of which all have become partakers, then you are illegitimate and not sons. So if you are a son or daughter of God, and God says, nah, I'm not going to punish you, I'm not going to deal with you, what's he saying to you? He said, you're not legitimately my son or daughter. So God is going to intervene in your life as necessary, because God has an aim for our discipline and an outcome that he wants. And we have to have the same aim and desire for that positive outcome with our children. So as they meet their challenges and we rightly discipline them, then they know, my mom and dad love me. My mom and dad love me. And my dad and mom care for me. And by their exercising punishment at times, it shows that I'm legitimate. I'm really their son or daughter, and they love me to the extent that they're willing to point me in the right direction. So it validates the child, and it's important. Your children want to know the boundaries, and their innate nature is to challenge the boundaries. But you've always got to tell them there are boundaries, and you have to stay within those boundaries. This is the way it is when you're 2, 3, 5, 15, as long as you're in my household. There are boundaries, and I'm always going to point you to those boundaries. And I want you to understand how important they are, because if you accept those boundaries, when you move out of my house, those boundaries are always going to be with you. And you're going to know this is the right way, this is the proper way. And it brings benefits to you, and it helps you, the child, to become a good citizen, a good part of the community. The fifth point is, obedient children are pleasing to their parents. Obedient children are pleasing to their parents. So all of you who have children, when are your children the most pleasant? When they're unruly, defying you, or when they're being obedient? Don't you just love the child when he's obedient? We always did, and I think we all do. As you know, everyone, and the principle here is, correct your son, and he will give you rest. Yes, he will give delight to your soul. So if you have children, you want them to act properly, and you're teaching them properly, and they make your life more pleasant. So we want to teach our children, and we want them to practice what we teach them and exemplify that. And so as parents, we want them to do what we've asked them to do. And we're not asking them to do anything that is not unbiblical. We're doing what is biblical. And as you see children who are not obedient, why is that? Is it because the child just can't hack it? He can't be obedient? It's a matter of teaching and training and showing them the way. And it's not some luck, you know, you didn't luck out and have some good kid. It's not a matter of luck. It's a matter of parental training and direction. You know, some children have more of a gentle nature and are easier to deal with. And then you've got some people that aren't. Not all children are easy, but you, as a parent, have to win. You have to teach them, you have to work with them, and it's not pleasant. I know from personal experience it's not. And when you, and there are kids that you're going to butt heads with every step of the way, it seems. Why don't you just stop doing this, because it's killing me. And we had that feeling. There were times when, man, I can't take this anymore. It was always butting heads, and oh, man. It just, you know, if you've had that experience, it's not fun. And it wears you out. But you have to stick with it and in the right way, try to point them in the right direction. However, we were, as I've said before, we were glad when the pressure stopped. And thankfully, the hardhead isn't living with us anymore. So anyway, but that's one of the challenges we face. The next principle, the sixth one, children are to obey their parents. They are to obey their parents. And this relates to Colossians chapter 3, verse 20. It says, children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. And so children, you know, as parents, we're trying to teach them what's right and wrong, what's true, what's worth living by, and that's pleasing not only to us as parents, but it's also well-pleasing to the Lord. Remember, it talks about Abraham teaching his household. That was part of why God was pleased with him, because he taught his household God's way of life. And God wants a relationship with us, but a relationship with God or anyone else requires self-discipline. And so we are to properly discipline our children and help God's qualities to be developed in them. Obedience will bring blessings to children is the seventh principle. Obedience will bring blessings to your child. And this is brought out in Proverbs chapter 1, verses 8 and 9. There it says, my son, hear the instruction of your father. Listen to your mom and dad. Listen to their instruction. And do not forsake the law of your mother. So listen to what your mom and dad say, what they instruct you in, and put it into practice. Listen to them, for they will be a graceful ornament on your head and chains about your neck. So they will be something positive in your life as you adopt those principles and put them into practice. The Bible clearly says that although parents are certainly blessed by children who are well-behaved, the primary blessing of good behavior flow to the children themselves. In fact, as they've learned these things, good manners are like fine jewelry. They grace the person who wears them. And your goal is that you'll train your children and they will wear these things. And there's nothing, you know, it's interesting that a child and a parent, you will have tried to teach them how to properly conduct themselves. And it'll be resistance at every step of the way. And you just feel frustrated and upset. And sometimes when you see them in another context, not where they're at somebody's house, isn't it a pleasure to see them say, yes, ma'am, and thank you, and do those kind of things like, wow, whose is this? Did I get another kid to show up here? But amazingly, out of your presence, or maybe even you're there, the way they're acting is polite, thoughtful. And you're like, is this my kid? I wish, hey, can I have this kid and I'll take him home? And so it's just interesting how that works. You know, in our experience, we've had my youngest granddaughter over, and she's perfect. She's just as good as she can be. And as soon as her mom shows up, it all goes down. You're whining, crying, and all this. And you're like, what happened? What changed? Well, it's a different dynamic between grandparents and parents. But this was just our observation, and it's happened many times over the years. So as children, you teach your children and they adopt the principles you've taught them. There's nothing more pleasurable than to see them having learned the principles and putting them into practice. The eighth point is this: the most obedient children are also the happiest, most self-respecting children. The most obedient children are also the happiest, most self-respecting children. Proverbs 15, verse 32 says, "He who disdains instruction despises his own soul." So you're not going to listen. You're not going to do what you're told. You're going to be the one that pays the price for that. He despises his own soul, but he who heeds rebuke gets understanding. It's a blessing, and it's going to play out in your life, and you're going to be a happy person. You're going to be a self-respecting person because you know you're doing what's right. The happiest parents are always seem to have the most obedient children, and the most obedient children are the happiest children. And as you look at disobedient people, they're not happy. They may be able to do whatever they want, and they'll tell you that, but they're not happy people. The first example that you could look to of an unhappy person who is disobedient is Cain. Cain was not a happy person. And yet he was living his life where he was the focus. He was still the spoiled child demanding his way. And nobody was going to tell him differently. But he was not a happy person. He was an angry person. Angry at God, angry at his brother, probably angry at his parents. He was not a happy person. But the obedient person is. And a lady by the name of, a doctor by the name of Diana Baumrind of the University of California did a 30-year study. And what she found out in dealing with children over that time, she discovered that children who score highest on adjustment scales tend to have parents who adhere to a traditional model. That is, and the Bible is a traditional model. As regards discipline, these are parents who have no reluctance to punish their children when necessary for their misdeeds. And she found that they were the most well adjusted. And this is dealing with not church kids, but kids in general following that traditional model. Number nine, as far as these principles is concerned, is a lack of discipline contributes to death. It contributes to death. As it says in Proverbs 19, verse 18, "Chasten your son while there is hope, and do not set your heart on his destruction." So you're going to deal with your child, you're going to discipline your child when necessary, and you're not going to deviate from that. Because as you don't work with your child, you're not giving them hope. You're not giving them hope. Like it says, chasten your child while there is hope. So there is hope up to a certain point, but there comes a point where it's too far gone, and you're not going to fix it. So we want to stick with it, even though we're worn down and tired, and point them in the right direction. So and by working with them and giving them proper discipline, it gives hope. But even though you work with them and point them in the right direction, there's no guarantee, is there? So when your children become adults, they're adults and they're free moral agents and they can do what they want. And even though you've done the best that you could, they don't always continue in the way that you would like them to go. And that's something you can't control. It's disappointing, but it is the reality of life. But just because there's no guarantee doesn't mean we shouldn't pursue it diligently and faithfully. So proper discipline from parents makes it less arduous and painful for a child to properly discipline himself, to stay on the narrow path, that path that's essential to eternal life. And the final point in this group of 10 is this: discipline is the way to eternal life. Discipline is the way to eternal life. For the commandment is a lamp, and the law a light, Reproofs of instruction are the way of life. So the commandments are a lamp. How should I go? How should I live? It's a light to my path as I look at what's ahead of me. And the law is a light. How should I deal with this? How should I act in this situation? I can look to God's law, which will light my path. And reproofs of instruction are the way of life. Jesus made the bold statement that he was the way, the truth, and the life. And through him, we are granted eternal life. And this proverb, Proverbs 6, verse 23, tells us two things. Discipline is the way of life, way to life, and a lack of discipline leads ultimately to death. And if you don't learn to self-discipline, which is what your growing up in a household is all about, then what's the ultimate outcome? Sadly, it is that you will not be in God's kingdom. And I think all of us want our children to be in God's kingdom. So is it worth putting the time and effort into discipline? I think so. So we've not covered all aspects of child rearing, but we have covered the essential principles that I thought would be helpful, the principles that we can see clearly are biblical. So as we do these principles, then we can expect good outcomes, but we also have to realize that along the way, there will be, even as we approach this in a godly way, there will be pain, there will be disappointment and suffering, because that's how life works. But by applying these principles, these godly principles of parenting, we can lay the groundwork for a child to stay in the faith. We can do everything that we can do to prepare the way for them to walk in God's way of life. And I think that's what we all want as parents. So let's conclude with two principles that I'd like to cite before we quit. The first one is found in Psalm 127. Psalm 127, it's in verses 3 through 5. There it says, "Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord." And they are. They are a blessing from God that God grants to all of us. The fruit of the womb is a reward. It's something magnificent and wonderful that gives you an experience that you can't get any other way than raising a child. You learn things that are particular to raising that child. As it says, like arrows in the hand of a warrior. So if you are a parent, children are arrows in your hand. They're like arrows in your hand. So are children of one's youth, as it says. They are like arrows in the hands of a warrior. And it says, happy is the man who has his quiver full of them. So if you have children, what a wonderful blessing. And you may have a less in your quiver than others, but it is a blessing from God. And you have the opportunity to be God to them in the way that you deal with them. And you have the opportunity to launch them as an arrow toward a target. What is the target you want? Hopefully it is that they would be faithful people of character, and that they would end up in the kingdom of God. And as you have that approach, it says, you shall not be ashamed, but shall speak with their enemies in the gate. So you want your children to be raised up, and you want them to grow up and to be mature and to be able to take on leadership responsibilities and live up to their full potential. Proverbs chapter 22, 6 is the last one we'll look at, and we've talked about that at the beginning. And this is our overall purpose, and that is to train up our children in the way that they should go. And when they are old, they will not depart from it. That's what we want. We want them to be pointed in the right direction, to learn that right direction, and to stick with it throughout their lifetime. It'll make all the difference in their individual lives, their work lives, in their marriages, and in every facet of their lives. And they're in our hands, and God has given them to us, and hopefully we will exercise the responsibilities that God has given us to do in a way that will be pleasing to him. So In 9 years, I've never spoken about child rearing, but I thought it's about time, so that's what I felt I would do. And my wife and I have looked at a child rearing program, and so we're going to make it available. And so if you would, people signed the list and they're interested in it. So we want to talk about how we make it available to everyone. So whether we do it individually or as a group, if you'll meet me in the Sabbath school room about 10 minutes after service, let's do it right after services because things get away from you if you don't. So meet in the Sabbath school room and we'll talk about how we'll do this. And so if you're interested, I'll see you in the Sabbath school room shortly after services. So thanks for your attention. Please have a wonderful remainder of the Sabbath and a wonderful week ahead.